Okay, we are holding on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, just past the middle of the Amud line, against Vabaya. All right, we were talking yesterday about eggs, eggs of kosher versus non-kosher birds. We talked about the simonim of eggs, and the last thing we talked about is if you find blood spots in eggs, when you are allowed to eat the whole egg and just throw out the blood spot versus when you have to throw out the whole egg, etc. Okay. So Chizkia says in this connection, how do we know in general that an egg of a tamei bird is also minatora? Now, you would say, isn't it obvious? We talked about this yesterday. Isn't it? You would think it's obvious. Anything that comes out of a tamei creature is itself tamei. So why do we
necessarily? So
that Tosfos discusses that maybe with eggs it's different. One explanation is that Tosfos says, given that bichlal, we wouldn't even know that eggs are mutu. You would think maybe they're considered eiv min achai or something. Mm-hmm. Were it not that you have something in the Torah that implies that they're kosher, therefore, maybe not, once you have that, then maybe on the contrary, maybe in other words, when it comes to an egg of a non-kosher bird, maybe there's no particular issur in it. So where do, because if you need a special you need a heter for eggs from kosher birds to tell us that you're allowed to eat them and they're not considered eiv min achai, so once we have that, then we would say okay, well, if it's not eiv min achai, then it's not considered then everything's kosher. So therefore we would say maybe even from non kosher birds. So how do we know that not? Shenema v'eis bas hayana, because one of the birds that's mentioned in the list of non-kosher birds in the Torah, both times, in Shmini and in Re'eh, is the bas hayana. So we have to ask, what is bas hayana? Bas yeshla layana. Ayana means, most of the Mephoshim understand ayana to be an ostrich. Does an ostrich have a bas? Now, obviously, ostriches do have children, but the point of the question is that Ramban says two things. First of all, given that they lay eggs, and then later on a chick comes out of the egg, you can't really call the egg per se a bas. It's as if you have a separate entity comes out of it, and then a new bird comes out of it. The basayana, right there in the spoken, the eighth basayana, yeah. So that's one explanation, is that in effect it doesn't have a bas, it's not born live from the mother, it's hatched out of an egg.
Ayana,
we just said, is an ostrich, according to most of the portion. So one point is that bas ayana, when the Gemara asks, does a yana have a bas, the point is, in other words, of course, it has children, but those children are developed from eggs, which are laid by the mother. So in effect, you have, it's like a separate thing from the mother. It's not like a child that's born directly from the mother's body, in a certain sense. That's one explanation that Ramban says. And the other explanation is, okay, of course they have children, but you wouldn't have any reason to think that the child, the baby bird should have any different status in halacha than the mother bird. So why does the Torah have to use the word bas? Just say ve'es hayana. So the answer is, what does bas come to tell us? It comes to tell us that the egg of the ostrich or of any other non-kosher bird is also not kosher. So the question is, as you just said, Dilma Heinu Shmaihu, who says maybe bas is part of the name? The name of the bird is bas hayana. Same way as we had a few days ago, we had bas mazga chamra and we had whatever. So yeah,
some should have said bas hayana.
The point is, maybe the name of the bird is bas hayana. So who says that the word bas is meant to teach us anything else? The answer is lois hakadaita. You can't think that. Because we find another example of a pasuk in Tanakh that mentions this bird without the word bas. Dichtiv bas ami pasuk in Eicha. Bas ami la'amser kaya'enim bamidbar. The daughters of my people, meaning the Jewish women, have become cruel during the siege of Yerushalayim when they didn't have food to give to their children and they're Rahman al-Flan, they're eating the dead children, etc. Rahman al-Flan. Ye'enim b'midbar, like the ye'enim, like the ostrich is in the desert. So we see that that's the point. So therefore, we see that the bas is not part of the name. So therefore, there's your answer. So bas really does mean the egg. The question is, v'loy, but you're telling me bas is not part of the name of the bird? V'haksid, but you have a different pasuk in Micha, one of the trails there. Esa misped katanim, the Navi says, I'm going to make a mourning like the tanim, the jackals, that make a mournful sound, the evil k'bnois yana, and a mourning, and a wailing like the b'nois yana, like the ostriches. In other words, so we see that the name bas is part of the name, because b'nois yana would be plural. The answer is no. The Gemara says that's not what the pasuk means. It doesn't mean b'nois yana is the name of the bird. It means k'ye'enezu shemisabela salbaneha. It means like the way a mother ostrich grieves for her children, when they've been killed or whatever. That's how the Navi is saying, I'm grieving for the destruction of for the Churban and the Galus and everything. Mm-hmm. So in other words, Bnois Yana means the way the Yana mourns over her daughters,
so
or over her children.
Word.
In other words, the point is, so therefore, the word Bnois there was not part of the name of the bird. The essential name is Yana, and Bnois means the children of it. The question is, though, still, but you have another pasuk with Vaksiv, the Shachnu Sham Bnois Yana, another pasuk in Yeshaya, where he's talking about how Bavel, the city of Bavel, is going to be so thoroughly destroyed that wild animals and birds are going to hang out there. So he says, Bnois Yana are going to live there. So on the face of it, again, Bnois is part of the name. And the answer is, again, no. What it means is, it means that there'll be like ostriches living there together with their children, like peacefully.
What do we say, so, Bnois now?
That's the point. Bnois, yeah.
Bnois.
Whatever, Bnois is, because Yana is feminine, so Bnois goes together with it. But the point is, it means, in other words, again, Bnois is not part of the name of the bird, the Gemara is saying. The essential name of the bird is Yana. Bnois means that it's going to live there peacefully and nest there peacefully together with its children. So therefore, we can still say that the word bas is not part of the name, and therefore we have the word bas available to teach us that eggs of a Yana are also awesome. Right. Okay, what about, Roxy, but you have another pasuk also in Yeshaya, Kechabdeni Chayat Asada. Hashem says, even the wild animals in the field will honor me. Tanim Ubnois Yana, even the Tanim, the jackals, Ubnois Yana will honor me, says Hashem. Meaning, in other words, like they'll sing Shira to Hashem, to praise Hashem when the Geula comes, when Mashiach comes. So what does that mean? If you're going to tell me Bnois Yana, you're going to say it means the eggs of the Yana. Eggs can't say Shira. So therefore, of necessity, there, Bnois Yana has to mean the actual birds themselves. Yeah. So therefore, it has to be the
Shira.
Eggs can't say Shira. Unborn babies in the womb can say Shira, but eggs... Fine, if Hashem wants, but the point is, the eggs are not a living creature that can say Shira. I mean, we're not talking about stone saying Shira even. But Chris, I'm still pretty fine that stone said Shira. Okay. Okay. Forget about that idea that Bas means that the name of the bird is Yana, and therefore whenever it says Bnois Yana, we have to darshin that Bnois means the children of it, or the eggs of it. No, Elaksiv Hayana or Ksiv Bas Hayana. It's true.
Sometimes it calls it Yana,
sometimes it calls it Basayana. So how do we get from our pasuk in Shmini and in Re'ei that Basayana means the eggs? The shiny hoch, but the pasuk Safra l'shteitev. The difference is that the difference is that if it was meant to be the name of the bird, it would be written as one long word, Bas Hayana, closed up as one word without a space, based off Hey Yod Ayin Nun Hey. The fact that it's divided into two words, given that when a sofer writes a Sefer Torah, he divides it into two separate words, Bas Hayana, then that teaches us that it's meant to be two separate things. One is the Yana, meaning the bird itself, and the other, Bas, that the egg of it is also awesome. What about all these places where it says Bnois Yana? First of all, Bnois is different, it's in plural. There's no other place in Tanakh where it says Bas Hayana in the singular. So another explanation is, once it has to say it over here as two separate words to teach us that it means the egg. So therefore, by analogy, everywhere else in Tanakh where it mentions this bird and it mentions Bnois in connection with it, so it separates the word Bnois from the word Hayana. But essentially, we're learning from the fact that it's two separate words. So the question is, Ela me'ata, by that logic, if you're going to say that whenever you have a name that's divided into two words, where you have a space in the middle of the name, and you're saying you're going to darshan it as two separate words. What about Es Kedor La'omer? What about you have by the four kings that conquered Sodom, and one of them then when Abraham fought against them, where one of them is named Kedor La'omer? The pasuk of Safra B'Tishrei, where also the word Kedor La'omer is written divided into two words, which we don't have that in our Sefer Torah. So hold that for a second. Hachi Nami the Tauti Shneinu. Are you going to say two names, Kedor and La'omer? Mind you, I mean, you have nowadays you have some
where
research
it's written.
No, the point is, yeah, because you have a space in the middle. Mind
where is it
in Parshas Lech Lecha, where it talks about the four kings, Es Kedor La'omer Melech Elam. So in the Gemara's Masorah, you have it written as two words, Kedor La'omer, with a space in
the middle.
In our Sefer Torah, it is not. This is one of the many examples where we have a machlokas between the Masorah in the Gemara versus the Masorah that we follow in our Sefer Torah. Just this week, actually, just this week, it was coming up on a couple of different WhatsApp groups and whatever people are discussing. You have a Rashi in this week's parasha that mentioned the eskol on the pasuk involving the Oren and the Kaporis. You have a Rashi quotes the pasuk the eskol asher atava oiskol bnei Yisrael. What is the vav doing there? And Rashi explains it. But in our Sefer Torah, we have no vav. So it's one example of many where you have a Masorah that's in the Gemara, or in this case by the Rishonim, by Rashi, which does not agree with the Masorah that we have in our Sifrei Torah. That's just how it is. The Rabbi Akiva Eger brings in Gilyon HaShas on a Gemara in Shabbos that has such a thing. He brings a couple of dozen examples like that we have throughout Shas, where we have things like that, where the Gemara has a certain Masorah and sometimes even learns halachas from the way that a word is spelled in the Torah, and we don't have it that way in our Sefer Torah. And the answer is, doesn't matter, we follow the Masorah as we have it, even where it contradicts the Gemara. That's how it is.
And we follow the halacha.
We follow the halacha as according to the Masorah, not according. So in this case, if you were to write Kedor La'omer in a Sefer Torah with a space in the middle, it would actually be possible. You would have to fix it. Even though our Gemara is saying it's written as two. Because the Gemara is clearly saying, that's meant to be two words. I was going to say, as far as etymologically, you have researchers nowadays say that actually it is. The word Kedor La'omer means Kedor means something like a servant, and La'omer is the name of some getchka that they worship, whatever. So it has actually a meaning of two separate words. And maybe but the point is, maybe that's why the Gemara's Masorah had it, that it's actually written as two words. Be that as it may, in our Sefer Torah we don't. The question, again, in the Gemara is, obviously, Kedor La'omer is one person, even if the name is written with a space in the middle. So therefore, what it says to the same... Rashi is not disputing the Gemara. Rashi cannot dispute the Gemara. He's a Rishon and the Gemara is Gemara.
He's not disputing, I mean...
No. Rashi doesn't comment on it because it's not relevant over here. With Balei HaMasorah, Sforim on Masorah, for example, Minchas Shai and Ur Torah and whatever, discuss this and say that, yes, the Gemara says it like this, that it's written as two words, but we don't have it that way and we follow our Masorah as our Sefer Torah are written. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara is saying that even though Kedor La'omer in their Sefer Torah was written as two words, nevertheless, it's clearly the name of one person. So why should it be any different with Bas Hayana? So what? So you have a space between Bas and Hayana. Why should that mean that we should darish in the word Bas separately? Amri. So the answer, the difference is like this. Hossam, when it comes to Kedor La'omer, v'shtei tevet pasuk lahu, true, it's divided into two words, there's a space in the middle, but but you would not be allowed to write this name, Kedor La'omer, across two lines. You would not be allowed to write, in the Sefer Torah, Kedor at the end of one line, and even if you say that there's a space between the words, you have to write those two words on one line, on the same line. So you can't divide it across two lines. On the other hand, Aval Hocha, but here when it comes to Bas Hayana, they're completely separate. You're even allowed to write Bas at the end of one line and Hayana at the beginning of the next line. Showing, in other words, that they're two completely separate things, even more separate than Kedor La'omer. And therefore, yes, we can darshan Bas separately. We can say that, yes, sometimes the bird is called Bas Hayana. It sends that sometimes that is one of the names of it. It can be called Yana or it can be called Bas Hayana. But the fact that Bas is so completely separated from Hayana that it can even be written on a separate line shows that we can douch in it as a separate word. And therefore we can learn from that the eggs of an ostrich or therefore of any other non-kosher bird are themselves not kosher.
Nowadays, as a Masorah, all Sefer Torahs are written that every word starts and every Sefer Torah the same. And ends with this every Sefer Torah the same, or you have some Sefer Torahs that have more words on one line, less than
nothing. Right. As far as what words there have to be on a line, no. You have many Sefer Torah nowadays are written. You have the Tikkunim nowadays that they follow as generally a standard thing. You do have, by the way, Yemenite Sefer Torah have nine differences. Different than the regular Sefer Torah that we're familiar with. A couple of different places where a word that we have chaser and they have mole or vice versa or whatever. Yeah, they have a Masorah of their own with nine differences.
In general,
other than that, you have the difference between Tzur Daka that we have with an aleph and most of the Velt has with a hey. But other than that, outside of the Temanim, leaving aside the Temanim, and there are nine differences, other than that, the only difference that you have between some Sefer Torah and others is through a Daka with an Aleph or a hey. But as far as you're asking whether how many words are written on a line, in principle, it could be however the sofer decides to do it.
Oh.
But in practice, nowadays, it's fairly standardized, but it doesn't have to be necessarily. As long as they have the psukos and sumas and whatever in the right places and the shiras in the proper form and whatever, then you're good. Okay. All right. So now we're done with eggs. Now let's get back to the Mishnah had said, Avol Omer Chachamim Kol Oifachola. We said that there aren't simonim of birds listed explicitly in the Torah. We said the Chachamim deduced them by comparing the Nesher and the Torah, as we had at the beginning of the Sugya a few days ago. And we said that there's the simonim. We said the simonim of birds, that it's not Dirdis, that it has a Zephyr, that it has Esper Yisera, etc. And then we also had in the Mishnah, We had in the Mishnah a statement that Rav Shimon Gamliel had said, or not Rav Shimon Gamliel, sorry, Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik had said, Kol oif hacholek es raglav tomei, any bird that splits its fingers, meaning in other words, as the Gemara is going to say, you stretch out a rope and see how it puts its fingers, how it puts talons on the two sides of the rope. If it does two on one side and two of the other and two on the other, then it means it's tomei. So let's analyze that. Let's analyze that, and we also have to deal with the question, which Tosfos takes up and many other Rishonim take up: is Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik disagreeing with the Tana, with the Tanakama, or is he just adding another detail? So let's learn the Gemara and then we'll talk. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Gamliel Omer, Dodes Va'Oichal. Looks like this: if the bird is Dodes and eats, according to any of the various definitions that the Rishonim have of Dirdus, that it holds down its food, or that it picks up its food with its claws, or that it kills, or that it eats its prey live, et cetera, yeah, all those different possibilities. If it does that, be a duashu tome, then you know for sure it's tome, no question about it. Yeshle, Espi, Yeseder, Bezefet, Bekukavan, and Nikolov, if it has the extra toe, again, either meaning the toe that sticks out and back, or the middle toe longer than the other one, of in the front, longer than the other ones, and it has a zephyr, it has a crop in its neck, the kukavane nikloff, and its gizzard can be peeled, then be a duashu tahar, then you know that it's tahar. Now,
what's the difference?
A zephyr is a crop. It's, you have the neck, it's a pouch in the neck, exactly. You have the partway down the neck, you have the neck broadens into a pouch where the, here, you can see it over here, for example, where the food gets stored in there temporarily. And later on it goes down to the gizzard and gets right. So the point of it is because since birds don't have teeth, and since kosher birds eat seeds and then other such hard things and whatever, so therefore they need sort of a predigestion to take place before it goes down to the stomach. So that gets accomplished in the zephyr; it gets softened in there. Anyway, the point is that so we're saying that if it has those, it's tahor. So Rashi learns that what it means is it needs to have both. It needs to be that it's not dirtus and that it has these other three simonim. Rav Gamliel was saying only then do we know it's tahor. Earlier in the sugya, we learned a couple of days ago, we talked about that Tosfos disagrees with that and says that no, what it means is if you know what Rav Gamliel means to say is if it's dirtus, then you know for sure it's no good, sure. But if you don't know one way or the other whether it's dirtus, if it has the other three simonim, then that tells us it's not dirtus and therefore it's good. In other words, according to Rashi, you need to definitively know all four to know that it's tahor. Otherwise, you need to start figuring out whether it's one of the 24 or not. According to Tosfos, all you need to know that as long as you don't know for sure that it's dirtus, and you see that it has the other three, then you don't have to worry that it might be dirtus. The fact that it has the other three shows you that it's not dirtus. That's how Tosfos learns. Okay. Then the Mishnah, then the Braisa continues. Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik Omer, like he said in the Mishnah, what you do in order to check whether the bird is, what you do is you stretch out a string for the bird and see when the bird perches on the string, how does it arrange its toes? If it divides, if it has two toes in front of the, on one side of the string and two toes on the other, tomei, then it's a tomei bird. But if it does three on one side and one on the other, then it's tahor. So you have the question: is Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik disagreeing with the Tanakama, or is he, or which is Rav Gamliel, we said over here, or is he adding to it? Is he saying that even if he's not dirtus, if he does the two and two arrangement, then that makes him that alone is enough to make him tummy. In other words, effectively that's a fifth simon. Or is it that he's saying, practically speaking, you want to know whether the brood is a dirtus or not, see whether it divides its toes like that, two and two.
And if it does, then you know
that it's a dirtus. In other words, according to that way, that's dirtus. In other words, looking at it that way, he's not giving a different simon. He's just giving you a practical way to know. How you know if it's dirtus is if you see it does two and two.
Yeah.
If it's three and one, then at least you know it's not
dirtus. Two
in front, two in back. So you have, here's the string. Here's the string. So the bird has two toes in front of it and two toes in back of it. Some parrots, for example, do that. Some various other, you can see in the pictures over here. So you have two toes wrap around the back and two toes wrap around the front.
Right.
So that's no good. As opposed to, if you have three and one, then it's good. Interesting thing that's come up here and there over time is we've been talking about eggs. So there's a breed of chicken that's commonly used for egg production in the United States, and for all I know in the rest of the world, it's called a leghorn chicken. And they actually, a number of times, the Shiloh has come up because people have done experiments with it and found they'd stretch out a wire for it, and they'd find it would do two and two. So according to what we're saying over here, that's no good. And so it became a whole controversy. One answer that was given to say that it's okay is, the bird does that at first because it's afraid of people. So therefore it does that at first. But later on, if you leave it alone, eventually it'll move to the three and one configuration.
It also should depend on the size of the stick that you put
underneath. No, we're talking about
the stick.
I don't know that would make a difference necessarily. The expression over here was chut shum shik.
I don't know, this just sounds like a rationalization. Is that actually true?
No, that's the fact of the matter is, once you have that Jews for generations have been eating these eggs and these chickens when they're shechted, and to all of a sudden bring up a shayla and say everybody's been eating treif is a very hard thing to do. So like this,
the
fact of the matter is, they found many times it does do three and one. Sometimes it does two and two. So therefore, yeah. According to many of the posts, again, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is not arguing with the Tanakhama. He's adding a detail. How do you know if it's dirtus?
If it's not dirtus,
Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik says if it does two and two, means it's dirtus, according to those Rishonim.
And the previous ones did not say that.
They didn't say it because they were saying, if it's dirtus, it's shrek. However you determine it's dirtus. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is telling you, here's a way to determine real quick if it's dirtus. He's not arguing necessarily. That's the point. He's adding to what the Tanakhama, he's adding a detail. Here's how you tell whether it's dirtus. Anyway, to answer your question, there are actually various breeds. There are a lot of different breeds of chicken out there, and there are various ones that at different times questions have been brought up as far as the kashrus of them. Do we have a reliable masorah on them? I was reading about there's another breed of chicken out there, for example, that was developed in France sometime in the 1800s or something that has five toes on each foot instead of four. Normal chickens have four, three and one. So is that the same species? Therefore, does it have a masorah? So there's quite a bit of discussion. It's not such a simple thing to say because it's called chicken, therefore it's good. But Reb Shimon Elazar, I remember Reb Shimon Elazar says, here's another detail, how you know whether a bird is dirtus. Call oif hakolet, mina avir tomei, when a bird catches things in the air and eats them, in flight, and eats them, then it's tomei. What does he mean? Siparta nami miklat kolta. A siparta, which is a kind of bird that was known to be kosher, does the same thing. You'll throw it something and it'll catch it in mid-flight. The answer is omer abayah kolat va'oichol kamin. We don't just mean that it catches it while it's flying. We mean that it eats it while it's flying too. As opposed to the siparta will catch the thing in its beak and then it'll land on the ground or whatever it'll land on, put the thing down, then pick it up and eat it. So then that's fine. It's not a simen tumah if it does that. If he eats it in the air, then Reb Shimon Elazar is saying that's a simen tumah.
That's the alpha?
Yeah. Okay. Acherim oimrim, and then acherim, which usually means Reb Meir, say, shochen im tmeim. Seagulls. So you have one of the birds mentioned in the list is a bird called the shochaf, and many translations, many in the Farshim translated as a gull. So yeah, gulls, seagulls, rapacious.
They don't eat in the air.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. We're not saying that any bird that doesn't eat in the air is kosher. We're saying if it does eat in the air, it's a simen tumah. So the seagull should be A means B doesn't necessarily mean not A means not B, right? Come on, you know, philosophy 101. So therefore, so any bird that catches and eats in the air, we're saying is tame.
Right.
But if it doesn't catch and eat in the air, maybe it's tame, maybe it's not. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the point.
No,
fine. Okay. I mean, ultimately, again, nowadays we only eat birds with a soda anyway. So it's right. Okay. So the relevance of these simonim, for example, the Shach points out. But let's say, for example, we have a bird that we find that always does toes two and two, not like we were talking about with these leghorn chickens where sometimes they do one, sometimes the other, but if it always does two and two, even if there's a masoda on it, you have to say that masoda obviously was wrongly founded, and therefore the bird would be traced after all, just like we had the other day. We had in the Gemara a bird that they assumed for a while to be kosher, and then they found that it was dotus, so therefore they asked it. So it's still relevant to know these simonim, but not that you can even master the bird through them, but that if you see that, right.
At what point did we decide that we're not going to go according to Simon and we're going to go according to the Star?
So because we said, it was already, Rashi already mentions it, because we're not clear on many of the details of the Simonim that we're mentioning here in the Gemara. We're not clear on the identities of the birds mentioned in the Torah or even in the Gemara. We're not clear on the meaning of some of these simonim. For example, you have a four or five way machlokas what dotus means. You have a two way machlokas what efe yaseira means.
Right.
So with all of that, the result is that we can only eat with a masoda.
And
we mentioned in the Gemara oif Torah nechabal masoda, but the Gemara's oif Torah nechabal masoda had actually been the other way around. If you have a bird but you don't know whether it's kosher or not, and somebody tells you they have, and you tell them, somebody reliable tells you they have a masoda on it, then you're good. But we say the other way around now. Even a bird that we're not sure of, you have to have, or any bird, we have to have a masoda on it. So if it's something that we know Jews have always been eating, then fine. But if we don't, then yes. Acherim say that if you have a bird that lives, that hangs out with tame birds, then it itself is tame. Im tahor, im tahor. And if it hangs out with tahor birds, then it's tahor.
There's
an additional point. Keman k'Rav Eliezer. Yeah, to a certain extent, yes. And in fact, you have a Gemara in Bava Kama that says this concept that like tends to stick with like. You find it in Chumash and Neviim and Ksuvim and Mishnayos and Gemara. And then I don't remember what all the proofs are, but yeah, one of the ones is this that we're saying over here, Shurchanim Tmeim, it's Tommy. And you have other examples you have an example, for example, it mentions about in Nevi'im, you have about Yiftach, but it says that empty people gathered together with him, like he himself was an empty person, so therefore he hung out with empty people.
Sure, that's true.
To a certain extent, yeah. A person hangs out with good people, with Chassidim, with Lomda Torah and whatever, then yeah, eventually it rubs off on him, yeah. Okay. Fine. Keman k'Rav Eliezer. Now, which opinion, which Tana would this be like? That would be like Rav Eliezer, the Tanya. As we learned in the Braisa, we mentioned before the Zarzil, but we at this point actually is in that Gemara and Baba Kama. Rav Eliezer, I'm a loy lachinam holach Zarzil eisel oirim. It's not for nothing that the Zarzil, which we mentioned the other day, is a bird called in English a starling. Not for nothing does it go together with the oriv, with the raven, elamif neshahu mina, because evidently it's part of the same min. So even though it looks physically different, it looks very different, nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says it's still considered. He says, we learned the other day, that when it says eis kol oriv lamina, that Rabbi Eliezer said that we have a ribui from eis kol, and we had a ribui from lamina, and we said that Rabbi Eliezer includes the zaris here based on one of those, because he says that it's included. Orev, the Orev, Lamino, Rabbi Eliezer, and Lobby, it's a Zarzir. So now Rabbi Eliezer is explaining, on what basis am I saying that a Zarzir is from the Min of the Orev? Because it hangs out with it. Yeah. The example, Ben Chumash, with it, by the way, is that you find, what does it say, that Esav goes, and now he's a daughter of Yishmael. By Yelach Esav al Yishmael, by Yikach, yeah. Same idea. Yeah.
You are who your friends are.
Yeah. So therefore, so on the face of it, then Acherim, who are saying that if a bird hangs out with Tmei, then it's Tomei, on the face of it, he's talking only according to Rabbi Eliezer. So not necessarily would that be the halacha. The Gemara says, no, after the payment of Rabbanan. No, you could say that Acherim are even going according to the Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. They would say, Shochan min Nidma Kamunan. They would say, Acherim would say, what do I mean? Not just if it hangs out with them, if it hangs out and also has a resemblance to them. So Rashi just says a resemblance in appearance. So in other words, for example, the Zarzir wouldn't be included because it doesn't look anything like an Orev. But you have some of the Rishonim explain that Nidme means actually not so much that it looks the same externally, but that it has the same internal simonim. So we said the other day, for example, that an Erev has two Simoni Tara and two Simoni Tumah. So therefore, what it would be is if you have a bird that hangs out with ravens, for it to be Tumah, it would have to be not only that it hangs out with them, but also that it also has two Simoni Tara and two Simoni Tumah on the same morning. Okay. So it's not only, so it also the Epinimius, exactly. Okay. So now we're done with birds. Now we're going to go on to the next thing in the Mishnah, which was the Mishnah had mentioned locusts. So the Mishnah had said, the Pasuk mentions for us four types of locusts that are kosher, and by each one it says l'minoi or l'mineu. Again, simonim for them it doesn't say in the Pesukim. So the Mishnah had said the simonim of locusts are, of kosher locusts are as follows. They have to have four regular legs. They have to have four wings. They have to have katsulim, which is the longer legs there's the longer legs in front. In addition to the four legs, locusts are insects. All insects, all standard insects have six legs. But in the case of a locust, you have four of them are regular legs that are used for walking, and then you have two that are taller than the other ones and are used for jumping. Give me that, and then I'll show you a picture. So it has to have four regular legs. What? It could be. So it has to have four regular legs. It has to have these additional two jumping legs. And then it has to have wings. And there has to be a knuff of choifenes rubai that the wings have to cover the majority. The wings have to cover the majority of its body. Where were we over here?
But again, we don't need them.
Yeah. So here is, for example, So here you have an example where you have a locust. It's a type of locust. But the point is, you can see that it has this big leg that sticks out over here, and a similar one on the other side that it uses for jumping. This one also, you can see, it's an interesting thing, by the way.
This thing here.
Yeah. No, that's a wing.
That's a wing.
That's a wing. You see, yeah. It's not a leg. No, the leg is this thing. It comes out of its body and goes up to form like a knee and then comes down again. Rashi actually has an interesting take on it here and also on the pasuk where he uses the expression that these jumping legs have to be near its neck, which is an interesting point because in all the locusts that we're familiar with nowadays, these long legs are not the first pair of legs closest to the neck. There's the middle pair of legs. You have the front one
connect to the neck here.
No, it doesn't. It's the middle set of legs. So therefore, you have the front, you have the middle, and the back. The middle ones are the ones it uses for jumping. So actually, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that on the basis of that, apparently, the locusts that we're familiar with, he says, don't meet that criterion that Rashi says. They don't have their jumping legs closer. They're not the front legs. Therefore, he says, we shouldn't be eating locusts. So in his time, the Jews of Morocco still had a Masada to eat locusts. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh writes this. So he says he successfully convinced them to stop eating them on the basis of this. And he says, up until now, he says for many years now, there's been like every 2 or 3 years, there's been a plague of locusts that's been attacking this area of Morocco. Since they accepted on themselves this chumrah of his and stopped eating locusts, he says it's been 12 years now and there hasn't been a locust infestation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is Arachan Kodesh. Okay, so now let's go to the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah of Hagavim Kolshi Yeshle, we said that it has to have four regular legs, two jumping legs, and it has to have knafayim, it has to have wings, and knafayim choifenes rubai, that the wings have to cover the majority of it. Now, what do we mean my rubai? The majority in what dimension? Along the length or along the circumference? Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav Roiv Orkoi. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, it means most of the length of the grasshopper. But Amrila Roiv Akefa, a different version of what he said is it has to be the majority of the circumference of the body of the thing. Amr Apapa, and Apapa says therefore because we're not sure Hilchah Be'in and Roiv Orkoi Be'in and Roiv Akefa. So therefore we're going to have to have in order for the locust to be kosher, the wings have to cover most of the length and most of the width. Otherwise, obviously such thing exists. Again, you have the Jews of Morocco until fairly recent times had a Masada for it. The Jews of Yemen still do. So obviously there are some types of locusts that have that. With long and wrapped around enough of the body that it covers most of the Torah says, the Gemara is going to all the pasuk mentions is that it has these jumping legs. How we learn these various other simanim, that the Gemara is going to discuss next. This is, by the way, it's a very common thing. You have in a bunch of places in Shas where a papa will do this. You have a machlokas between Amiroyim, what to do in a certain case, and a papa will compromise and say, therefore, we should do like both. We do that every day. When we say the Baruch HaShem Yotzer is one of the examples of that. You have one opinion, and this is a practice. You have one opinion that says that you should finish off Baruch HaShem Reifish Chobasser. The other one that you should finish off Baruch HaShem Umasli Lasser. And a papa says, so we should do both, and that's what we do. There's actually an interesting verse that I saw on this. We know at the end of it, we know when we make a Siyum Masechta, we mention the 10 sons of Rapapa, and there's many explanations why. So there's a verse on this from Reb Shimshon Aaron, who was Reb Shimshon Aaron Plonsky, was the Rav of a town called Teplik in Russia, and then afterwards he was an important Rav in Yerushalayim in the years around 1930, 1940. Anyway, he says a verse, you have 10 places in Shas where Rapapa does this, where you have a machloket between Chachamim, and Rapapa makes peace between them by saying we should follow both of them. So because he has covered for the Chachamim that we should follow both, that we should follow all of them in these cases, therefore he has the schut to have 10 sons, who now we mention by the seal. Okay. Turn it up on him. We learn in a braisa. Okay, let's talk some more details about this business with the locus. First of all, ein loy achshav v'osim l'gadol l'achazman. Suppose that right now a particular locus does not have these simonim, but later on it's going to grow them. Kugena zachal, for example, zachal. Mutter, it's mutter even now because eventually that species does grow. For example, the wings. Locusts aren't necessarily born with wings, they develop them later. So therefore, you can eat it now as long as you know it's from a species that will develop them. In fact, actually, you have a kriyuk siv in the pasuk that teaches us this concept. You have in the pasuk that says that what kind can you eat? The kind that have knee-shaped legs higher than their other legs, to jump on the ground with them. So the word loy, it's written in the Torah with an aleph, which means that it doesn't have these things. We read it, the ksiv is loy with a vav, which means that it has. So the kriyuk ksiv, the combination, teaches us, even if it doesn't have them right now, as long as even if loy with an aleph, it doesn't have them right now, as long as loy does have them at some time in the future, then you're allowed to eat them even now.
Does it sound different?
Well, to us nowadays, they don't. It could be that in earlier times they did. I don't know.
You can eat them before they develop.
That's the point. As long as you know they're from a species that will develop them, then you're okay. We're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, the same thing is true as far as fish. If you have a species of fish that hasn't yet developed its scales, you're still allowed to eat them as long as you know that eventually they will develop them.
So we know it's not really a simmon.
That's the point. It's a simmon because eventually when they're mature, they have the simmon.
It's a simmon, it's a species, but not,
not for the individual, right. Yeah.
What's a
zachal? So the Gemara is going to actually give a translation in Aramaic, but whatever it is, it's apparently some type of locust. In modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the word zachal to mean like the one of the earlier stages of the development. Insects go through several development stages, you know. They start out as a worm, and later on they're a pupa, and later on they're this, and whatever. So in modern Hebrew, they use the word zachal to mean like the first stage, when it's like a caterpillar or a worm or something. Whether the Gemara means that, could be, but the pastures, it means some other species, but whatever. Yeah. Okay, so then it's Musr. Rabbalazib Rabbi Yossi, that's where we learn it from, because it says Ashaloi Kraim, exactly that. So it says Ashaloi Kraim with an aleph, is how it's written in the pasuk. Afa pisha im layaksha, that's what it means. Even if it doesn't have them now, but also Magada, Lachazman, as long as it's going to develop them later, then we're good. That's why you have a kriyuk seed there. Okay. My zachal, so what is the zachal that we just mentioned? Omer Abaya Iskirin, so Abaya says it's what we call in Aramaic Iskirin. Some type of locust, or maybe some stage in the development of the thing, whatever. Okay. Now, you have in the Pesukim like this. You have the Pesuk that mentions the Kra'ayim, the long legs with the knees. The next Pesuk after that mentions the actual species. It goes like this. That's Eila Mehem Techelu. These are the ones of the locusts that you can eat. And from Arbe Laminoi, the Arbe according to its kind, which means that you have an Arbe and you have a subspecies that goes under the Arbe. There's a Solom. That's how the pasuk goes. So it mentions four species, and after each one, it mentions the word laminehu. So let's analyze that pasuk and see how we learn from it. First of all, what are the different minim we're talking about, and how we learn the details that we mentioned in the mission of the different simanim. So, the pasuk says, "Ela mehem tachelu es arbe v'goyma." So, it mentions four species. The first, let's identify them. Arbe is a goyvai. The one that the pasuk calls arbe is the one that in our language, and in the language of the time of the Mishnah, they called goyvai. The Yemenites have a Masorah that's the smallest one of all the locusts we're mentioning over here. Solom the Roshon, Chagol the Nippo, Chogav the Gadion. So okay, four different types of locusts. Mas Hamad Lomos.
So four different kinds.
So you have Arbe, which is what they called in later times Govai. Solom, which in later times they called Roshon.
It's not Arbe, Solom.
Arbe and Solom are two different species.
Okay.
You have what the Torah calls Arbe, and in later times they called Goyvai, what the Torah calls Solom, and in later times they called Roshon, and so forth. Yeah. Chagol is what later is called Nifol, and Chogol, which later on is called Gadion. Okay. Maskam Adloim Lamino.
All the same names to Arbe, but it's separate.
So Arbe is also a generic term. Sometimes that means locust in general, like Lamachas Arbe and Mitzrayim. But it's also the name of a particular sub, of a particular species. Okay. Why do we have four times in the pasuk laminoi laminehu for each one of them? Lahavi, that comes to include four subspecies. Sipodas kromim, v'yuchne yerushalmis, v'haret subya, v'harazvanis. Four other subspecies of them. You want to see some pictures of them, by the way? Here are some pictures of various ones that the Yemenites have Masurdas on.
That day is kosher.
Yeah, they have, for example, this one over here, the desert locust, is one possibility of what the Arbe, what the Goyvai is, the Solom, the Chogov, and the Sipodas Krum.
Common food?
I don't know if, I mean, the Yemenites, I don't think they were common food necessarily, but first of all, they're useful in years of famine, I guess, when you don't have anything else. But my wife used to work together with a Yemenite lady whose mother every so often would send her a package of kosher grasshoppers to eat. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure she delighted it.
They're dead, of course, yeah. They don't have to be shafted. So here's pictures if you want to see them.
Yeah, I can do them, so it's okay.
Okay, that's fine.
We'll have it on Shabbos.
Sure. Okay. Fine. Okay. Now that's all one braisa. So we have one braisa which says that all we're learning from this pasuk is the names of the eight types of locusts you're allowed to eat. Without getting into any details of the simonim of them, this braisa essentially so far is just telling us that you have eight different types, and you have the four that are listed in the pasuk and four more that we derive from the name. Now we have another braisa. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned like this. These four times that it says lamino or laminehu, it's not meant to be like the first Tana, like the first Braisa said, that each one is including, is telling us a different type of, it's not just rather that it's telling us the prosim, that you have four other types that are not mentioned in the pasuk that you're allowed to eat. Rather, the names of these four that it's mentioning in the pasuk and the four laminos and laminehus are teaching us you have elu klole klolos and elu prote protes. You have in these psukim, you have klolim on top of klolim, which are not general statements, on top of general statements, which on the face of it shouldn't be needed, and protim on top of protim, and all of those are coming to teach us details about what types of locusts, not just what species, but how you can identify the kosher versus the non-kosher ones, says Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel. So like this. So elu klolim klotis, elu klolim klotis, elu protim protis. You have klolim on top of klolim that are there for a drosha, and you have protim on top of protim, meaning protim within protim that wouldn't have been needed except to teach us a drosha. So like this, let's start off like this. Arbe is a goyvai. The arbe, yes, is like the first kind of, like the first braita said, is what we call in later times goyvai.
That's klolim klotis.
Laminoi, then when it says laminoi, lahavi sipodas kramin, fine, so that includes the type of locust called sipodas kramin. Now, both of those have this in common, that both of them do not have a gabachas. Now, what is gabachas? So Rashi explains that gabachas is, you have the word gabachas later on in Parshas Tazria, you have it in connection with a person. Gabachas means where the front half of a person's head is bald. Like you have people lose their hair in front and male pattern baldness, and that kind of thing is called in the pasuk gabachas. You also have baldness on the back of the head, which is called karachas. I had my fourth grade Rebbe, when we took him, said, here's how you remember. Gabachas begins with the gimel, which is near the front of the aleph bays. Karachas begins with the kuf, which is near the back of the aleph bays. So that helps you remember that gabachas is in the front, karachas is in the back. Anyway, the point is that Rashi says the same thing over here. Gabachas means you have some kinds of locusts that have hair or hair-like things or whatever on their heads. These kinds of locusts that we just mentioned, the Arba, the Goibai, whatever, and the Sporus Chromium, do not have that. They don't have that. They have hairs on the front of their heads. They have hairs. These two types, the Arba and the Goibai, whatever, and the Sporus Chromium have hairs on the front of their heads. That's Rashi's explanation of Gabachas. You have another explanation the Oruch brings, is that Gabachas means something like a hump, like what a camel has. Anyway, the point is that, it continues Rabbi Shmuel, Aimli Ela Habav Aimli Gabachas. So if you only had that mentioned Arbe Laminoi, then all you would know is a locust is kosher only if it has Habav Aimli Gabachas, only if it does not have Gabachas. If it has hair on the front, if it has hair on the front of its head, then it would be kosher, because it would be like, if it has hair, it doesn't have Gabachas, it doesn't have the baldness on the front. Habav Yeshla Gabachas Minayin, how would we know that there are locusts that are kosher even if they are bald in front? Therefore, you have the next one, which is mentioned in the Pasuk, which is called Solom, and which Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel identifies the Solom as what they call in later times Nipo. Now, that's different than the first Braisa had said that the Solom is what's called in later times Roshon. Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is saying that the Solom of the Pasuk is what we call in our language Nipo. Yeah, they're arguing the pashtos. Well, so actually, the Gemara is going to say later they're not necessarily arguing. The Gemara is going to say later that it's not necessarily arguing. In different places, they called these locusts by different names. In some places, they called the one type Roshan and the other one Nipple, and in other places, they flipped them around. Okay, the point is that so Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says, so it's not just that we have the names Arba and Solom in the pasuk to tell us that you're allowed to eat an Arba and you're allowed to eat a Solom and you're allowed to eat the related species. But also, it's going in this order to teach you about the simonim of them. The minehu of it, the sipporus chromium, do have hair on the front of their heads. The next one, the solom, zennipol, the minehu lahaviyata ushkaf, and where the minehu comes to include another type called ushkaf, those are bald on the front of their heads, or they do have a hump, according to the Aruch. So now you know that those are also kosher. Now let's continue. V'ainli ela habav v'ainli gabach. That's fine. So then that would tell you that if you have so now we would know so far. Okay. So if you have a bird that does not a locust that does not have a gabach, that it has hair in front, or habav yeshle gabach, or one that does have a bald spot, because we said that that's what the solom is. Habav ein loizana, but neither of those have a tail. Neither of those types of locusts, none of those four that we mentioned so far, the goibai, the sipporus chromium, the nipol, and the ushkaf, none of those have a tail. So if you only have those ones listed in the pasuk, then you would say, you know what, a locust needs to be kosher. It doesn't matter whether it has hair on the front of its head or not, but it matters whether it has a tail. If it has a tail, it's no good.
How do you read it? Seems like
the Ainli Ela Habav Ainli Gabachas, you would think that you would only know that fine, a locust can be kosher if it does not have a bald spot, Habav Yeshla Gabachas, or if it does have a bald spot, Habav Ainli Zonav, or if it comes without a tail. The question is, Habav Yeshla Zonav Minai, and how do you know that a locust can be kosher even if it has a tail? And therefore, we have the third one in the pasuk, the chargol, which Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel identifies as the roshon, and that has a tail. Leminehu lahavias hakarsepes v'eshachlonis, and the word leminehu in connection with the chargol comes to teach us related species, the karsepes and the shachlonis, which also have a tail. What do we mean by tail, by the way? Interesting thing. I mean, locusts don't have tails per se, because insects, but they're called on a tail. But what it is certain kinds of locusts have a thing that sticks out from the females anyway, have a thing that sticks out from the back of their body. It's actually in English or in scientific language or whatever, it's called an ovipositor. That's how it digs in the ground with it to lay its eggs. It digs a shallow hole in the ground to lay its eggs in it. But in terms of how it looks on the thing. It looks like a tail, and therefore the Gemara is calling it a tail. I don't know. Maybe we can find a picture. But here, for example, that one, I guess, has something like that. Yeah, comes to a point in the back here. Actually, this one has a good picture of it. So you can see it has this little thing. It's not biologically, it's not a tail. Yeah, biologically, it's not a tail per se. It's an ovipositor, but whatever. The point is that it looks like a tail, and therefore therefore Rabbi Shmuel is calling it a tail. Okay. So far, so good. So in other words, so far what we have is as follows. You have so far of the three types that we mentioned, and there's subtypes. You have like this. The first type, the Arba Anis Laminehu, have hair on the front of their heads, and they do not have a tail. The second kind, the Solom, does have a bald head, and an Anis Laminehu has a bald head and no tail. And the third kind, the Chagol Anis Laminehu, has a bald head and it has a tail. So all three of those combinations so far were okay. Then one is hair without a tail. One is right.
Both together. And both still kosher.
Right.
But if you don't have none of them, then
well, hold on. That's right.
That's what you
okay. Well, then no, we're not done yet. Ainly Ella above Ainly Gabacha. So far, then we can know like this. If the locust does not have a gabachas, a bald area in front, or habava yeshla gabachas, or if it has a bald area in front, habava ein lo zonav, or it doesn't have a tail, habava yeshla zonav, or it has a tail. So far, we've covered all those possibilities. What about another characteristic? Habava ein roshi oruch. So far, though, all of these three have this in common, that none of them have a long head. But now we have to add another detail. How would we know that if we have a locust which has a long head, which therefore is not like any of the above, because all three of the above have short heads, and they have that in common, how would we know that there's a type that has a long head and is kosher? So minayin, how would we know that? So omauta, so you would say like this. Instead of learning from the fourth one, which is mentioned in the pasuk Chagav, we're going to learn it in another way. Amarta, you say like this: Hareata don binyan av mishloshtan. What you're going to do is you're going to make a binyan av based on the three that we have so far.
Which is hair or no hair.
Tail or no tail, or both. Right. So loy re'i arba k'ri chargol, the arba is not like the chargol, the loy re'i chargol k'ri arba, and the chargol is not like the arba, because the arba has hair and no tail, the chargol has a tail and no hair, and so they're not like one and the other. The loy re'i shneim k'ri solom, neither of them is like the solom, because the solom has no hair, but it has no tail. What do all these three kinds that we mentioned so far, what do they have in common, given that they don't have anything in common between the three of them as far as hair or the lack of it, or as far as a tail or the lack of it? What do they have in common? They all have four regular legs. They all have four wings. They all have four regular legs. They all have four wings, and by four wings, by the way, what we mean is locusts typically have, many insects have, two regular wings for flying, and then two things that cover those wings. They're not really used for flying. They're used to protect the wings themselves. For example, you look at a ladybug, the parts of it that have the spots are actually those covers of the wings. If you pry them up, you'd see the actual wings. So it's the same thing with a locust. They have a hard covering over their actual wings, which are much thicker. That's these also. Yeah, a lot of insects have that. So they all have four. So all these three types of locusts we mentioned, so were all these six or seven types, because all of them are Nehu's also. They all have four wings, four legs. They all have Ba'avach Nafayim, four wings. The kautzulim, they all have these two jumping legs with the knees in the middle. And all of them have wings that cover the majority of their body, which, as we said before, means the majority of the length and the circumference. Then any locust that meets those criteria would be kosher. Now, though, that creates a problem. Continues the Braisa.
Do we do Masera?
Forget Masera. Wait. The question is, tsartsur hazeh. What are you going to do then about a tsartsur? A tsartsur, many there's one explanation is that it means cricket. So a cricket, let's consider it's a type of locust, it's a type of grasshopper. And yeshle abed aglayim medalik tenafayim because sulam knof of
picture of a cricket.
I don't know. But probably in here. There's a picture, but whatever. Yeah, a cricket has all these simanim. I don't know how clearly you can see in the picture over here, but it has. It has the
so
jumping.
It's much tinier than a locust.
So it's tinier. That doesn't make a difference. The arbe itself is also small. The point is, we know for a fact that the tsartsur is not a kosher species of locust, yet it has all these simanim, so on what grounds are you excluding it? So, yachol yehei mutter, you would think it should be mutter, and we know it's not. Tamad loyma chogav, that is why now you have the fourth one mentioned in the pasuk, the chogav. Namely, sheshmoi chogav. It has to be, in order for the locust to be kosher, it has to be called chogav. Now, we actually had it in the Mishnah. We said like this. We mentioned the simon. Chogav is a name of a species of locust. Now, we had in the Mishnah that it, among locusts, what are kosher? We said, Albert Aglaim, Albert Knafayim, Bakar Solom, Knoch of Koypinus Rubai. We said, Rabbi Yossi, Oimo, Ushmoi, Chogav. Rabbi Yossi had said that, in addition, its name has to be Chogav. It has to be something that is called by the name Chogav. Now, Tosfos points out over here that
To be kosher, without that name,
it's not kosher, right? So Tosfos explains that actually, Rabbi Yossi is not arguing with the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yossi is explaining that in order for the locust to be kosher, the simonim that the Tanakhama mention are all valid simonim, and you do need those. However, you also need, he's also adding another criteria that you need chogav. Now, by the way, Tosfos also points out in our sugya over here that the That apparently it brings from the Ribah, there's no type of chogav that is missing any of these simonim. If it's missing any of the simonim of our Mishnah, then it also doesn't have a long head or it's missing some other simon. You could have, for example, it could have a short head and the four simonim of our Mishnah, the four legs, the four wings, etc. And that, in other words, that's the point. In other words, saying that its name has to be Chogav is not taking away anything from the simonim that we said before. All it is, as the Braise is telling us over here, it comes to tell us that, for example, you're not going to include ones that have the simonim but are not called chogav. So once it's called chogav, it has the simonim, but the reverse is not true.
The head on
so the head is not really considered a simon for this purpose. That's the point.
A chogav is not something with all the three four simonim and a head.
So it may. So that's Tosfos says that it may have. So Tosfos says apparently what it is you could have that it could be. That if it has all the simonim of our Mishnah, the legs, the wings, the jumping legs, then it, as long as its name is Chogav, then it means it doesn't really matter. Then it means it could be that it has a long head. It could be that not. If you have a type of Chogav, if you have a type of creature that's under the category of Chogav, that does not have a long head, for example, then inevitably also it would be missing one of the other simonim as well. In order for it to be kosher, in other words, that's the point. It needs to have all the four simonim, plus it has to be called chogav, and then the head could be long or it could be short. Yeah.
So the head is not a criteria,
which actually you have, this that we're saying over here, that the name has to be Chogav, you actually have, the Ramban talks about, but it's uncertain from the way Rashi says it on the Pasuk, that Rashi mentions it has to be called Chogav, is Rashi Davka talking about if it has a long head, then it's only kosher if its name is Chogav, but if it has a short head, then it's okay just as long as it has the other simonim. Is that what Rabbi Yossi meant in our Mishnah and what the Gemara means over here? Or does he mean across the board it has to be called Chogav? And he says that the way the Rambam phrases it implies like the first way. If it has a long head, then it might be kosher, it might be not. Then even if it has all the other simonim, it has to be called chogav in order to be kosher. But if it has a short head, as long as it has the other simonim, even if it's not called chogav, then you're good. The Ramban writes that that's apparently how the Ramban.
If it has a short head,
and it has a Simanim, and we don't care whether it's called Chogam. The Ramban explains the Ramban that way and says maybe Rashi means that as well. But if it has a long head, even though it has the other Simanim, it also needs to be called Chogam. That's the point. Okay. So that's the going back to
which criteria do we follow? We don't know.
Lamaisa, we don't have a Masorah anyway, but for those who have a Masorah, I believe that they follow the opinion that says that regardless, it has to be called Chogam.
And we don't know anatomically how the chagga is different from those who have...
No, so what it would be is, in other words, it would have to be that it was known that in the times of the Torah, this creature was called chagga. So even though the Rambam writes, the Rambam writes in Pirush Mishnayot, okay, it doesn't have to be that in day-to-day speech they call it chagga. They could be calling it by the equivalent of chagga in the local language, but as long as they know that it's it.
But the chagga still has a special anatomy that the others don't. Otherwise, what's the point?
But the point is, in other words, that's the point. So if it has a long head, it may be from a kosher species, it may be not. So even if it has all four of the other simanim, the legs, the wings, etc., it has to be called chagav. It has to be from that subspecies called chagav in order to be good. Yeah. Okay.
So we don't know what's...
Now we don't know. So
anatomically.
Right. Okay. So Talmud Lama chagav. So now going back to the Braisa. So how do we know then that a tzaritzer or a cricket is osir? Because that's why you have the fourth one in the pasuk chagav. Sheshmoi chagav, meaning the name of it has to be chagav. In other words, the chagav does not have any different simonim than the other ones. We already went through all the possible simonim. We talked about a tail or not. We talked about hair or not. We talked about long and short heads. So the word the chagav is teaching us the fact that it has to be called chagav. Okay. Ishmoi chagav yocholach einbo yichol simonim alalu. Then continues the Braisa. So then, if you're saying Chogav, maybe it's good enough if it's called Chogav, as even if it doesn't have any of the other simanim. No, Talmud Loma, Leminehu. That is why it adds Leminehu. Leminehu by Chogav is not teaching us another type of locus, not like the first Braisa who said that each of the Leminos or Leminehus is teaching us another type of locus. Tanad, Reb Abi Shmuel was saying the last Leminehu by the Chogav is teaching us it's only kosher if it's Leminehu of the Chogav, meaning, so now when Tanya Rabbi Shmuel started by saying we have Klole Klolos and Prote Protos, that's what we mean. We have Klolim on top of Klolim and we have Protim on top of Protim, because here we have the word Leminehu, which is extra to teach us this concept. Later on, the Gemara is going to point out, we have the word Solom also is teaching us something that is not there to teach us the actual Solom itself, but rather is teaching us the Jerusha. So that's what Tanan Rabbi Shmuel meant, that we have many Kolim and many Protim and these Sukim, which through them we learn out what are the kosher and what are the non-kosher, what are the kosher and what are the non-kosher. So
and
the name Chogav, right. So again, you have the possibility that maybe that means only if it has a long head does it need to have the simanim plus the name chagav, or maybe it means that even long or short head it has to be. Okay, fine. Thus far the braisa. Okay, now parich rabachoi. So now rabachoi says I have a problem with this braisa. First of all, by the way, parich means he asked the shaila. I mean he asked the shaila. But Tosfos actually, in some places, points out that some of the Amoraim had unique expressions that are used only with them. This expression Porich, for example, you only find with Rabbi Chai.
Other
Tanoim would say Maskiplo Rabbi Chai or whatever. Yeah. So, okay. Porich Rabbi Chai, Malahanach Shekein Ein Rosh and Oroch. What are you talking about, though? The fact is, the other three that we mentioned in the Braisa, the Arbe, the Solom, and the Chago, do not have long heads. So maybe you should say, in other words, that you should say that a locust is only kosher if it doesn't have a long head.
None of the simanim that have this full simanim have a long head.
So we said, yeah, because we were at, yeah, no, Rabbi Choy is pointing out the fact. Because so far what we said is, we went through like this, we asked in the Braisa, how do you know that locusts with long heads are mutter? We said, because you're doing a Sada Shava from the three locusts that we had so far. We said that, therefore it doesn't matter long heads or not, as long as they have the simonim, plus we have the last point that's called Chogav, then we're okay. So Rabbi Choy is asking, the fact of the matter is, the three that we mentioned do not have a long head. So maybe therefore the point is only ones with short heads are mutter. Where are you getting from that? Then what do you mean a sada shava, therefore ones with long heads should be mutter? You could say mala sada shava shabam, they all have this in common, they all have short heads, so only short headed ones are kosher.
Questioning.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to answer, so what? As long as all the locusts we mentioned have the four simanim, then we're able to include all the other ones, including ones with long heads, and we can't slog that up. The question is, Rabbi Choy asks, if you're going to say like that, then you shouldn't have to write the chagol on the pasuk either, which after all is similar in having the four simanim. We shouldn't have needed to write the, we said the unique thing of the chagol is that it has a tail. But if you're going to tell me that once we're doing a tzadah shavah, we just say whatever, as long as they have the four simanim, then we're good. Then we shouldn't have had to mention the chagol either. Loy lichter, it shouldn't have been written. The tasi, the arba, the solom. You would be able to derive it from the arba and solom. Same thing. You would say, never mind tail or no tail. The fact that the arba and the solom are both kosher, even though one of them has a bald head and the other one does not, we're saying, therefore, as long as they have the four simanim, then we're good. So any other locus, doesn't matter bald head, not bald head, doesn't matter tail or not tail, doesn't matter long head or not long head. The fact that we're saying we have to include the chagol and shows that we, in other words, that other criteria, that other physical characteristics are important. So in that case, why shouldn't the long head be? The chagol has a tail.
Has a tail.
Yes. So we see that other...
What kind of head?
We said, Rabbi Choy said they all have short, it has a short head. The Arba, the Solom, and the Chargo all have short heads. So therefore...
And it has all the other simanim?
The Chargo, we said the Chargo has a tail.
Yeah, but what about its other...
It has the four simanim. It has four legs. It has the jumping legs. It has the four wings. It has Knof of Choy and Asura.
So maybe we need just like the Chargo, but specifically the one who has a tail and all the other four simanim, it's only the Chargo.
No, but the fact is that we say, the fact is we're saying that the, no, because the fact is we're saying that, that the Braisa is telling us we're taking the Arba, the Solom, and the Chargol and making a Tzadah Shavah from them to say any other locus that has the basic four simonim, forgetting about the head, forgetting about hair or not hair, forgetting about tail or not tail, et cetera, and forgetting about whether the head is long or the head is short, as long as it's got the four simonim and it's called Chagov, then we're good. Rabbi Choy is asking, the fact of the matter is, the three so far do not have a long head. And if you're going to tell me a long head doesn't make a difference, a tail shouldn't make a difference either. So we shouldn't have had to mention the Chargo. We should just mention the Arba and Solom. And we have a Tzadah Shavah from those. Ela Ikala Mifrach. Obviously, the answer is you weren't able to do that. Because if you tried to do that, you would slug it up. Mala Hanach Shekein Ein Lahem Zonov. Because you would say the Arba and the Solom don't have a tail. And therefore we need the chagol to tell us even though it has a tail of kosher. Well, hachinami ikalam mifrach. So then, by the same thing, we can ask the question about the shape of the head. Malahanach shekein ein rosh and oruf. The fact of the matter is, the three that are so far mentioned do not have long heads. So where are you getting from that a locus with a long head should be kosher?
But the one with the tail is only the female because it has the head.
That's fine. The fact remains that you have some. Fine, but the fact remains that species grows the tail, which the other ones don't.
But
you're not going to have the male as kosher and the female as not.
Right.
The same way as we said before at the beginning of the sugya, that even if it doesn't have the jumping legs or the wings or what have you yet, as long as eventually it's going to develop them, yeah, meaning the species has them, then it's kosher. The same thing would be as far as this. So
then what?
So that's Rabbi Choy's question. So what are you telling me that you can automatically include long-headed grasshoppers because you have a tzadah shavah, because they have the simonim of all the other ones? None of these have a long head. And the same way as we say we need the chargol to teach us that certain ones with tails are mutter, you should need another one that has a long head to teach us that long-headed ones are good. Ella, Amar Rabbi Choy. No, so Rabbi Choy says actually, Solom Yisrael. No, actually, in the three that are mentioned, the Arba, the Solom, and the Chargol, the Solom is actually the extra one. Because you could have said like this, Loy Lichter Rachmanat Solom, the Pasuk did not really have to mention the Solom, the Kesei Me Arba Me Chargol. You should be able to learn it by a Tzadah Shavah between the Arba and the Chargol. Because the my power, both the Arba and the Chargo have the four simanim. They both have the legs and the wings and so forth, but they're different as far as the hair and as far as the tail. So the my parchas, how would you think to slug it up? You would say mala Arba de ein legabachas, but an Arba doesn't have a bald front head. You would say hare Chargo yesh legabachas, okay, but a Chargo does have a bald front head and therefore it's kosher. You would say mala Chargo yesh lezonov. You would say, okay, but a Chargo has a tail. Maybe a locust needs a tail to be kosher. No, hare Arba de ein lezonov. So between those two already, the Arba and the Chagal alone are exact opposites. So because one has something that the other one doesn't have and vice versa. So therefore, no, that's the point. You can. The fact that you see that both the Arba and the Chagal are kosher teaches you that whether it has hair or not doesn't matter because the Arba has hair and the right. As long as it has the four simonim, then you're good. Therefore, the Solom is extra. Therefore, says Rav Achoy, Solom de Kosev Rachmana Lomali. So why would the Pasuk have to list the Solom, which has one thing in common with the Arba, namely it doesn't have a tail, and one thing in common with the Chagol, namely that it has a bold front of head. Right. In Ainit.
It doesn't have the other Simonim.
No, it has the four Simonim. It has the four Simonim, of course. Yeah.
It doesn't have...
Like the Arba, it doesn't have a tail.
Right.
Like the Chagol, it has a bold front head. So why would we need to mention it? If you're going to say, we automatically know that it doesn't matter whether it has a bald front head because you have the Arba versus Chagol. We know automatically it doesn't matter whether it has a tail because, again, Arba versus Chagol. So why do we need Solom? So, says Rabbi Choy, the point is, therefore, im ene inyan legufay. So if you don't need the Solom for its own purpose to teach you that a Solom is mutter because you could learn it. The purpose of it is, tineo inyan l'roish ha'aruch. Use it instead. You have the concept all over Shas. Im ene inyan l'zeh, tineo inyan l'zeh. You don't need it for this context. To use it for a related thing in a different context, use the solemn to teach you that locusts that have long heads are also kosher. In other words, the solemn itself does not have a long head. What we're saying, you don't need the solemn there in the pasuk at all. The fact that the pasuk tells you the solemn is telling you should realize as long as the locust has the same four simonim as the arba and the chagol, then it doesn't matter what other characteristics it has. It doesn't matter whether it's bald in front or not. It doesn't matter whether it has a tail or not. And it also doesn't matter whether it has a long head or not. The solemn, even though the solemn itself does not have a long head, but the fact that it's there teaches us that concept that he is another criterion which doesn't matter when it comes to finding the kashrus of a chagol, namely whether it has a long head. Okay, so so now we understand the two brachos.
Basically, we're trying to determine, we have determined the ones that are needed, and now we're coming to the end of the ones that
aren't needed. In other words, what we can say is as follows. So far what we're saying is we have seven characteristics of locusts. Four of them that matter as far as a kashrus, or actually eight, I guess, really. Five of them that matter as far as a kashrus, three that don't. The five that matter are it has to have four regular legs, it has to have four wings, it has to have the jumping legs, and it has to have two jumping legs, right? And it has to have knuff of choif in its ruboy, that its wings cover the majority of its body. And the fifth one, we said it has to be in the category of chagav. We said maybe that's across the board, maybe that's only for long-headed ones, whatever the point is. Then you have three more criteria which are not important where some kosher locusts have them, some don't, namely whether it's bald in front or not, whether it has a tail or not, or whether it has a long head or not. Okay.
So that's
eight altogether then. Four simonim in its body, the one that's called chagav, and three,
yeah.
Right. Okay, fine. But my okay, I guess we'll actually stop over here for Meyer again. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. That's the Shem. The Gemara we'll deal with. Okay, so we had two brises. We had one brisa. Which comes from Sifra, which just said that the names of the four locusts and the luminehus are just teaching us Pasha, that you have eight types of locusts that are called. Then you had Tonad Great Abi Shmuel, which went into all these details about the different physical characteristics. What's the underlying machlokas between them? That we'll deal with tomorrow.
What is it?
That's what we'll see. We'll see. They have two different ways of learning the Sukkim over here.
Yeah.